I have to go upstairs and record something again, so...
Quiet.
Do not...
smash anything.
And do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
Do not come into your room.
You're listening to Pandemic, a podcast from RTE News and Current Affairs on the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Colm O'Mungine, and each week I'll be talking to RTE's correspondents, reporters and others to bring you news, updates and analysis you can trust. We can guarantee you a high quality of information. Sound quality, on the other hand, might vary somewhat. The correspondents and I will be recording this in many cases on mobile devices from home, so please do bear with us. It's Thursday the 24th of June, episode 91 of Pandemic. This week, later in the episode, the strange and tragic case of Jürgen Konings, the far-right Special Forces veteran who caused a nationwide manhunt in Belgium after stealing weapons with the apparent intention of targeting the country's leading virologist. Also, EU leaders meeting amid mounting concerns over the Delta variant of the virus. It was at the top of the agenda in Brussels, and unlike some other summits that we've had, they reached broad agreement on COVID measures after day one, so we'll get a bit of detail on that. Our Europe editor, Tony Connolly, is up next. Tony, how are you?
I'm good, Colm. How are you?
Good. We're getting into this, as my classics teacher used to say, in media res, which is not the spotlight on the top of a cameraman, but the Latin for in the middle of things. You're in the middle of the summit in Brussels.
Yeah.
What's top of the agenda there?
Well, they're discussing COVID, obviously. That's quite a big topic. But also Russia. There's a big Franco-German issue which just landed 2 days ago, all about how to deal with Vladimir Putin. And they're going to talk about Turkey and the Syrian refugee situation in the Middle East. And it's an unusual summit in that they are gradually letting journalists back in. And of course, it's an in-person summit as opposed to the virtual summits we've been having over the past couple of years. So, yeah, it's indicative of the gradual change right. That is rippling over Belgium at the moment.
Well, this podcast, concerned as it is with COVID, let's go there, obviously. Angela Merkel expressing concern about the freedom of movement that might be afforded, particularly to people from the UK. I suppose, what's her proposal first, and how has it gone down along what dividing lines?
Well, this is all about the Delta variant, obviously, which everyone has been talking about, and it is starting to cause real concern in Europe, even though we have associated it with the UK mostly and India, obviously, to begin with. But this week, the European Centre for Disease Control said that it was going to be the dominant variant in Europe, and that by the end of August, 90% of cases would be derived from this particular variant. And that has caused some concern at member state level, because countries like Portugal and Spain have been welcoming in UK visitors in quite large numbers. And so there was some unease, if you like, that by doing that, they were hastening the emergence of the Delta variant in Europe, and we're a bit concerned about that. So they've been discussing that at leaders level this evening, and they've just, as I speak, not long ago, they have published their conclusions on that. The European Commission was also presenting their views on how to learn lessons from the pandemic, both in terms of what happened in 2020 when the pandemic struck, the whole question of PPE, stockpiles and so on, and preparedness for the future, vaccines, new surges of COVID, new pandemics. How should the EU prepare for that? What lessons should they learn? I would have to say that by and large, they haven't adopted a major course correction because of the Delta variant.
How do you mean?
They haven't stopped the whole momentum towards reopening this summer, because of course we've had the digital COVID certificate, which took a couple of months to realize. That's a digital platform that will allow national COVID apps or COVID systems to plug into your European one, so that if you turn up at an airport to travel this summer anywhere in the EU. If you have some kind of national record that you've been doubly vaccinated or you have a negative COVID test or you've recovered from the virus, then that'll be recognised digitally by all other member states. There was some question of whether that might be on hold because of the emerging Delta variant. But by and large, the EU is saying we just have to remain vigilant and cautious about this because, in essence, that particular system that they've developed does already provide member states with the discretion to pull an emergency brake if they fear there's a surge in a new variant in a particular country, so they can limit the numbers coming from that country. So essentially the message tonight is, as you were, carry on, but do so with caution and vigilance, and member states still have the discretion to limit numbers coming into their country if they wish.
Was there a bit of unhappiness? I think in a report earlier, as we record this on Thursday, you were saying that the Portuguese took slight umbrage at, without being named, being one of the countries that was being implicitly criticised for letting people from the UK coming in, saying that they were sticking to the European criteria for allowing people into their country, and disease rates in the UK are not of the order that would cause concern if it was any other variant. It's just this is about the Delta variant, and that hasn't changed the advice of the ECDC, and they're still in compliance with that.
Exactly. There was some unease expressed in Germany about Portugal opening up to UK visitors and then the caseload in Portugal with the Delta variant rising as a result. But the Pedro Costa, the Portuguese Prime Minister, said, well, look, you know, we've been following EU guidelines. We have, there's a certain threshold of caseload and the UK is not above that threshold. So we are within the EU guidelines. And that was the response. I mean, there's been some questions raised about Spain as well, allowing people in from the UK without even necessarily having a PCR negative COVID test. And this, again, is reflective of the tensions we've seen in the past 6 months between those countries who really are desperate to open up their tourist industries, open up the tourist season to visitors from the UK in particular. And those countries who are saying, hang on a second, we have to slow things down, we don't want to have a third or fourth wave. But the whole question about the Delta variant is an interesting one because it has emerged at a time when Europe does seem to be getting its act together in terms of vaccines. And we know that if you are doubly vaccinated, especially with the Pfizer vaccine, then you have pretty good protection against the Delta variant. As things stand at the moment, 58% of Europeans have been given at least one dose of the vaccine, and that would amount to about 430 million doses by the end of this week. And so there is a feeling that Europe is catching up. It is gradually protecting itself against these new variants. So therefore, there isn't necessarily the need to have a radical change of course. And some officials have been talking about the experience in the UK where spikes in cases associated with the Delta variant were also linked to places where there had been a slower uptake of vaccinations. Other officials talking about the fact that the variant may have been spread through schools, and of course schools are now closing for the summer, so that could be taken into account as well. But I think overall the message is, yes, we have to be cautious and vigilant, but we're not going to majorly change the direction of reopening the tourist season for the summer and rolling out those digital COVID certificates so that people can travel.
Right. And you can see why one of the items in the agenda, I think, was economic recovery post-COVID. And for Greece, Spain, Portugal, Italy, the whole tourism sector is absolutely vital to how they get out of this with their tourism-dependent economies.
That's right. And just on that point, of course, parallel to all of this, 27 member states have been submitting their plans, their spending plans under the Recovery and Resilience Fund. Remember, that's the big 750 billion euro EU fund that was agreed last summer. And all member states have been drawing up their own spending plans for receiving those funds. And those plans over the past couple of weeks have been assessed and approved by the European Commission.
Ursula von der Leyen is doing a bit of a tour of Europe, isn't she?
She's doing it, yeah, absolutely. She's doing a kind of a lap of honour around Europe. Every country that sends in its application and then that application gets approved, she goes to that country to do the handshake or right. the fist bump or elbow bump or whatever it is, just as an endorsement of that country. But, I mean, we are talking about very large sums of money, and those sums of money have to go to very specific projects that are, it's not just kind of filling in the hole where COVID hit in terms of health spending and loss of earnings. The whole idea of this is like a kind of an internal Marshall Plan to build back better, to refit the European economy for the green agenda and the digital agenda, so that, you know, this is not just money to repair the damage from the pandemic, it is to kind of relaunch the European economy with a big stimulus package, and that is going to be, it's going to be a lot bigger for some countries compared to other. I mean, for example, Italy is going to get nearly a quarter of this money. So a huge focus on how Mario Draghi, the Italian Prime Minister, is going to spend this money and how it is designed to really reform the Italian economy in ways that they've been trying to reform it, you know, for years, all the way back to the financial crisis.
Right. You're in the yellow zone at the moment. So what does the yellow zone look like, and what strictures are on your travel, living as you do in Belgium? I mean, how's life there? Is it noticeably opened up since we last spoke a few months ago, when I think the topic of conversation was the row over AstraZeneca? But what's life like visibly on the street where you are?
It's visibly a lot different. First of all, a few weeks ago, they reopened terraces. In other words, we're not talking football stadiums here. We're talking about the bits outside pubs and restaurants where people like to eat and drink outdoors. They opened up, first of all. Indoors is now open for pubs and cafes and restaurants between 5 a.m. and 11 p.m. I think it's a maximum of 4 people per table, not including kids. And of course, you have to wear a mask if you're going up to pay or using the restrooms and so on. Shops have been open for a good while. Schools and creches and so on have been open anyway. But yeah, I must say, a very broad sense of life getting back to normal. Last Saturday, I was at a garden party where I think complying with the rules, you're allowed to have a maximum of 50 people for an outdoor social event.
Right.
And I mean, it was very handy in that it was kind of a one-stop shop for meeting friends you hadn't seen in a year. But a lot of people were saying that they were worried that after an hour they'd all feel exhausted and want to go home to watch Netflix.
Yeah, realize how much they didn't like people they thought were friends.
So, but generally, I mean, it is a wonderful feeling to go out when the weather's nice and you can see families eating outdoors. The weather's been pretty good. And of course, Belgium is progressing very nicely in the Euros. So there's, you know, there's been a lot of people gathering to watch football in bars and restaurants and cafes and so on. So things are good. Although I have to say that the Delta variant is a key talking point here, because next week, from this Saturday, they're banning visitors from the UK from entering Belgium unless they are diplomats or essential workers. So that just shows you that different member states are taking different measures when it comes to limiting travellers coming into their country.
Now, the lockdown in Belgium was pretty hard, and it led to a certain amount of, I wouldn't call it public outrage, but across Europe in various countries, Ireland is no exception, there has been an element within society that has been anti-lockdown. But in Belgium in particular, I suppose, this made the headlines around the world after a particularly frightening incident. So, I mean, how hard was the lockdown, and what was the opposition to it like, before we get to the specifics of how it ended tragically, at least for one person who was opposed to the lockdown?
Well, the first time lockdown last year between March and June was pretty full on. I mean, it was like everything just shut down. Streets were deserted. People were restricted to going shopping for essentials or going to the park that had to be within 2 kilometres, and people were taking it very seriously. Even within a park, you couldn't sit down, you couldn't sit on the grass or a bench, and that was the case up until last summer. And then, of course, last summer everybody thought life was getting back to normal, And then when the autumn came, you had this huge influx of Belgians who you know, Belgium geographically is at a crossroads. People were travelling back from all over Europe from their holidays. You had the whole expat population, of which I am one, working for the EU institutions or journalists or people working for NATO. And they were all coming back as well. And, you know, we had various variants that were cropping up. And then you had suddenly a huge spike. I think we talked about this last year in Liège, a huge spike in cases. And that was associated with students, you know, spending Monday to Friday at university and socializing.
Probably in a flat share and so, yeah.
Flat shares and so on. And then going back to see their parents at weekends from Liège and spreading the virus in that way. So from the autumn, there was another pretty hard lockdown, and it was a social lockdown. So bars and restaurants and cafes closed completely and didn't really open until a few weeks ago. So that was a very hard, long struggle for the hospitality sector, whereas shops in general stayed open, even though there were restrictions about the numbers you could have in there, and everyone had to wear masks, right, and so on.
And what was the opposition to the lockdown like? I mean, was it visible? Were there, you know, periodic demonstrations, or was it a regular thing? I mean, did you notice it in your day-to-day life going around Brussels in between
home
and
work? Didn't. I mean, I must say I didn't notice any major expressions of, you know, pure opposition to lockdowns. I did see some posters proclaiming a march for freedom, you know, the freedom to hug your loved one, the freedom to, you know, socialize, meet, all of those things, with, you know, very cute pictures of fathers with their daughters and so on. But, you know, to be honest, it seemed, certainly in Brussels, it seemed fairly low key. I mean, there were very well publicized and social media captured disturbances in some of the parks around Brussels when the weather got better. There were large,
right, young people clashed with police down
gathering
in the Bois.
Bois de la Combre, which is, you know, that's one of the great things about Brussels, is that you have very beautiful parks that are very accessible and, you know, lovely places to go in nice weather. And, you know, people would go and bring beer, and then they were having, you know, fairly, you know, robust clashes with the police. And that did sort of sour the climate. But the case you're mentioning was a really astonishing and shocking case. This involved a man called Jürgen Konings, who was around 47. He was in the Belgian Air component, part of the Belgian Air Service, and had been an elite soldier in various Belgian military operations in Yugoslavia, Iraq, Afghanistan. He was an experienced sniper. But he had joined Vlaams Belang, which is a right-wing populist party, and had been very active on social media attacking COVID lockdowns, and in particular a number of virologists in Belgium, in particular a man called Mark van Ranst, who was a, you know, very prominent Belgian virologist who was supporting the lockdowns. And in May, just a couple of months back, he left a farewell note at his residence and had gone to the military base and made off with two guns, a semi-automatic and an automatic machine gun, and four rocket launchers,
right,
having already threatened members of the government and the military, and including virologists, including Mark van Ranst. So,
who had to go into hiding, didn't he?
Yeah, so Mark van Ranst and his family had to go into hiding because this man, Jürgen Konings, was seen kind of staking out his house. And then he disappeared into the woods, Dilberbos, which is a large wooded area in Limburg province. And he disappeared in there. He left his Audi A5 parked nearby, and police found the rocket launchers, but not the machine guns, and not a big stash of ammunition he had taken with him. So there was a serious manhunt going on for about a month, actually, in Belgium, and a lot of people were quite alarmed and worried that such an experienced individual with you know, hardened war experience and an experienced sniper was kind of at large with a vendetta against members of the government and a prominent Belgian virologist. But the story came to a rather sad and tragic end because his body was found by a jogger in a wood on the 20th of June, just last week, and in this Dilberbos area in Limburg. And so he had obviously taken his own life perhaps 3 or 4 weeks previously. And the strange and unsettling thing was that his body was found in an area not far from his car, and an area that had been searched and swept by Belgian military. And of course the Belgians had invited in Dutch and German special forces as well to try and find this individual. So it was quite a bizarre sort of side story to a period in time when the lockdown was lifting in Belgium and people were getting back to normal.
Right. And actually, Mark van Rans, the virologist you mentioned, reacted quite generously, expressing his sympathy to Jürgen Koning's family and saying that they'd lost a father, a relative and a friend, but expressing obviously his relief that the ordeal was over for him and his family. Tony, what's left on the summit agenda as far as COVID-19 goes?
Well, they've kind of dealt with it, Colm, this evening, and they are discussing relations with Russia at the moment. As I speak, it's around 9:10 local time. And this is an issue that suddenly landed on member states' desks a few days ago. It was a French and German proposal to have a deeper engagement with the Russian President Vladimir Putin, even to the point of resuming EU-Russia summits, which have been pretty much on ice since Russia invaded and annexed Crimea. But there was a feeling, certainly in Berlin and Paris, that if Joe Biden was able to sit down with Vladimir Putin, then why shouldn't EU leaders do that as well? And in the process, try and speak with one voice. You know, that's seen as something that you can do better in a summit. So that's really the other big issue at the summit today and tomorrow.
Right. Ending quarantine of a different kind. Of course, we'll be back tomorrow, Tony, with an entirely different podcast about a subject we've managed to get away with not mentioning so far in this podcast.
Voldemort, exactly.
That's it. All right, chat tomorrow. All the best.
Okay, thanks, Colm. All the best.
And that's it for another episode. We're back next week with another one. You can find more episodes at www.rte.ie/news/pandemic or on your podcast platform of choice, where you can also subscribe or even leave a nice review. Get in touch with ideas or comments to colm.omongain@rte.ie. That's colm.omongain@rte.ie or on Twitter @colmomongain. Until next week, take care, stay safe, and thanks for listening.